See, I've never actually made it to the end of the recording to actually see what happens when you get to the end. So 25 seconds was it.
It sounds a bit like the Chipmunks.
That's a little bit.
In there. She's a bit nice.
Yeah. Anyway, I think we can officially say the season's over.
Feels over.
It feels over. Hence you're on a couch, relaxing and chilling.
Relaxing.
Yeah. And it's been a big year. So, another episode of A Foot on the Line, and we're here to talk about and wrap up. Predominantly, the main thing is the Aussie titles. So, you went over, mate, 5 days in a row on the Gold Coast, and what looked like for, I'm not going to say the majority of Kiwis that are watching on the live stream, because there was a shitload of Kiwis over there, but for the Kiwis that were watching on the live stream back here, that looked like a pretty hectic 5 days.
Yeah, it definitely was. Like, I think it was funny. All the talk was how big it was going to get for the weekend, and it didn't probably live up to that. And it was big across particularly the back end of the weekend.
Yeah.
But that wasn't really the factor that caused it so challenging. Like the water movement and the currents there was just chaos. So yeah. I think, yep, surf was big, but I think most of the Kiwis that were there would say that was a factor, but not the biggest factor. The biggest factor was just the movement of water was just massive. And whereas Kiwis just don't quite kind of get to race and that sort of stuff, you know, like if you're based on the Gold Coast and through that Karawa sort of beachfront or Maroochydore where it was, I don't think you just don't get that sort of stuff unless you're in those areas.
Yeah.
So that definitely made an advantage probably for those guys that are based on the Gold Coast or the parts of the Sunny Coast that are really open to open water.
Yeah, and the perception that I had was that, yeah, you're probably right, but also it was challenging for everyone. It's not just 100%. A case of like it was, you know, if you're on the Gold Coast, lived on the Gold Coast or the Sunny Coast, you had an advantage over anybody else from around the country. But, like, it really negatively affected some of the best athletes in the world.
Yeah.
And it was just crazy to watch. We'll go through some of those anyway. But, I think when we did the preview with Joshy Minot a couple of weeks back, and his, like, I guess, not preview of it, but his advice to people going to race was you just got to survive. You just got to survive and get the top eight and that, and just sort of do enough to get to the top eight. But even that seemed like it was a massive challenge, and you actually had to have a combination of skill, good decisions, and a shitload of luck to even get to the point where you had the chance of making the top eight in a heat.
Yeah, well, I mean, all intents and purposes, Lana Rogers misses out of getting out of her heat and the open woman's iron. Like, there's no chance. Bevy was the same. Bevy was just, you know, he got hammered a little bit, but both of those two probably 9 times out of 10 don't get through the first round given the first two legs that they have.
Yeah.
You know, Lizzie Wellborn gets lapped in the semi-final of the iron. Like, that's just the reality of what it was. Like, you look at that, you know, Danielle McKenzie, you know, I'm going to blame her 100%. Like, she kiboshed herself. She came in after her warm-up before the ski and said, I feel like I should have got a bit hammered there because there's some pretty big waves out there. And I feel like if I got hammered, I'd know what it feels like. She has to roll 4 waves in her ski heat, doesn't make it through. And I think that was just the reality of what it was. You know, Gemma Smith doesn't make it through her ski. You know, the open males ski, you know, without, I mean, Lockie Tane, who I think most ski paddlers would argue is one of the better ski handlers around. You know, on a wave that was didn't look that big even there, just doesn't manage it. And I just think there were some places, particularly not just on the outside bank, on the inside reform as well, that it was just really challenging. It looked way harder than it was. And I think that was just the water that was going. And it was just, as Joshy said, it was just surviving till the last day and then having a shot after that.
Yeah. And so, and that's where I think it was, for me, there was a little bit of both in that you could You could say if you're in the finals on Sunday, you could say like you probably got a bit lucky as well. But equally, you can say you absolutely deserve to be there because you've had to get through. Like, luck only happens a couple of times. You can't get lucky for six rounds, for three rounds of ski, a quarter, a semi, and a final. To get to the front of that field, you actually have to be a good athlete. And I think for the most part, barring a couple, there was a few people that were probably, I think for barring a couple, good athletes won most of the big races. Very good athletes won most of the big races.
Absolutely. There is no way you win or make the final without being a good athlete. There's just no chance that that happens. I think it was really technical in that, if you were in certain parts of the line, it was more manageable for you, but you still had to get to that place and you still had to get to the hole, or you had to get to a shoulder, or you had to get to the outside break. And those things were still, to get to those positions, you still had to be good and you had to be fast and you had to take responsibility for what you were doing. And I think it was one of those really cool carnivals where you just saw really skilled people do really cool stuff. You talk about luck, and I hear what you're saying. It wasn't lucky. They had to be really skilled, but you did have to have a level of, I'm in the right place at the right time, and then I have to make a good decision. And that's what I think I saw plenty of, because still the top people were at the front more often than not. That's the reality.
Nobody's going to tell me that like Lana Rogers doesn't deserve to win an iron, or that Ben Carberry doesn't deserve to win a ski race. And and the reality is that Trimmie is on the very close to winning, and there's a Tom Norton. That's your podium. Can't tell me those aren't some of the best ski paddlers in the country.
100%.
In particular because the guys like Riley Fitz and stuff weren't there. Those guys have been at the pointy end of most ski races. So the fast guys ended up being there at the end.
And you look at all of those. You think about the board race, and you have Zach Morris, Odin Parrish, and Justin McMorland. Mm. The guys that have been around at the front end of everything. You think about the girls, Brodie Trinka might be a bit of a new name for many people, but she's been around for a while. You got Harriet, you've got Lizzie. Look at the ski race, and you've got Emily Doyle, you've got Scully, you've got who won it in the end? Naomi Scott. They're all good people. It was good athletes won the things. It just happens that good was not just about being the fastest. Good was about making really good decisions and putting a race together. And I think that's, if I'm honest, I reckon that's the ultimate winner. If I think about surf lifesaving, I think that sort of conditions leads to the ultimate winner.
Yeah.
That's really fast, has to be really good, but also can put a race together. I think that's something that is pretty cool.
Yeah. From a Kiwi perspective, first thing I say is thanks to the guys from Beyond the Beach, because they were onto it in terms doing updates and stuff like that, and keeping an eye on some of the Kiwis that were going around and making it through rounds and stuff. Because like when I saw it, I was sort of going, do we have a responsibility to try and highlight some of these guys? And I was at work going, this is really hard. I don't know who's over there. I can't really pick the guys that are racing for New Zealand clubs as well as I should be able to. But Jack and Nathan nailed it, and they were keeping well on top of everything. So that was fucking good. Thanks, boys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I think you're usually really good at that, but, man, those guys. Those guys do it. And, again, their ability to chuck stuff on social media is just – boys, I don't know if you have jobs or – I think you're at uni, but, man, you should just keep doing that stuff. Yeah, look, I was there, right, and I think – it's funny, I started thinking that maybe we didn't go that well. That's my kind of, when I was there, I was like, oh man, the Kiwis found this really hard.
Yeah.
But when I reflect on it, I think we had 13 medalists that must have got, and I don't know what the numbers are, but probably about 25 to 30 medals. I feel like that's a pretty good outcome.
If that's true, that's surprising. That didn't feel like that.
Yeah, so 13. There are 13. I'm pretty sure I wrote them down. There are Let me just do the count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, 13. There are 13 Kiwis who won medals. And of them, you know, there was, you know, people like D-Mac who won five medals out of six races. Oscar Smith who won three. You know, Sammy Roy who won a couple. Like Kate McCarthy, two golds. Like Charlize Duncan, two golds. Like I think it's...
I wonder if
we have this unrealistic now, because we've been going, you know, been so many people really stepping up, and I think if we're honest, some of those guys, it was a bit quiet for some of those guys. We went, oh man, maybe we didn't go as well, but I feel like 13 with 25-30 odd medals is a pretty good haul.
It is. It's a great haul, and like to be fair, I hadn't done enough research to actually know that. So that's really cool, because I think you're right. I think when we look at some of our superstars and some of our superstars that left some stuff on the table out there to the rest of the season, we probably came out of it a little bit flat. And when I say superstars, I don't just mean guys like Joey and that, that probably didn't get the results they wanted in the big races. But, you know, we talked up the Midway boys a little bit, and we probably put the cob wash on.
Yeah, we did. Sorry, boys.
Yeah, we'll take responsibility.
Yeah, 100% for that.
Nothing to do with you guys. And maybe some of the beaches as well.
Again, I think one of the things I think even you look at like the open male ski, we had a couple of boys in the semi final. You know, we had Jaden Murphy, we had Sammy Roy, we had Taylor Chamberlain.
Yeah.
You know, like three guys in that semi-final, that open men's ski. And yeah, they didn't make it through, but I feel like there was good representation. I think when you talk about it, I feel really uncomfortable saying this, but I think that individuals have greater expectations on themselves.
Yeah.
And I think we just have to be really careful to go – given the conditions, and like I said, yes, you had to be fast, but you also had to put really good races together. And given those conditions, I think that makes it, and I'm not trying to find excuses, but I think that makes it harder for some of our guys when you have to make a split decision and you've got people around you in all sorts of moving water, sometimes on gear that's not yours, that's pretty challenging. But again, you know, you look at one of the things I was pretty – clear to me was you can't just fly in and expect to be good.
Yeah.
Like one of the people that I was really, I'm not saying surprised because I think she won an award at the New Zealand Nationals was Tara Schotter.
Yeah.
She was at the front of everything, whether it be a board race, an iron race. She won a couple of medals in the surf teams and a Taplin. She was always there or thereabouts. And that was for me was something pretty cool. You know, so I think those Kiwis now that think they can just fly in, you know, get there a day or two before, maybe not even have your gear, I reckon that's hard. Yeah. And I think that's a real challenging thing. And I think it was really cool to see some really good teams there. Like one of the cool things, probably shout out to the Papamoa guys. There was probably about, I don't know, 15 or 20 of them. And they just seemed to be really ripping in, like young kids just really having a go. And I thought that was cool. They seemed to be having a really clear idea of why they were there and making the most of the experience. And I wonder whether some of our Kiwis got a little bit focused on the outcomes, and given the conditions, that maybe reduced the outcomes that they had.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I think that was something I was really mindful of.
Yeah. Mm. We'll talk about it now. We'll get to it later, but shout out to Kev as well, because you know it's regardless of, he's still a Kiwi and he's still coaching some of the best athletes. And I don't like to give him a lot of credit, but what his boys achieved, especially in the under 19 division, and some of the open stuff was pretty bloody impressive. So for, you know, as much as he's, you know, coaching one of the best clubs or the best club in the world, he still does a pretty good job, I think, and deserves some of the results that he got.
100%. I mean,
probably a few more he didn't.
Yeah, look, I think, I mean, you can be really critical of things, but there was lots of talk, funnily enough, around how Northcliffe was going to get beaten this time.
Yeah.
And they pretty much doubled Newport, like,
yeah,
in terms of points. And, like, they were just – and look, I'm biased. I get it because, obviously, I have a daughter that races for Northcliffe and, you know, we got Kev as a – you've got him as a brother and I've got him as a mate. But I reckon there's a real clear reason why they win. And it's not just about they've got great athletes. You just look at the infrastructure around it and there's always somewhere there. I hung out, which is going to sound weird. I hung out in the girls' tent and the girls' arena. And there's like four or five sort of managers in that girls' tent, always making sure the girls know exactly what's going on, making sure they're supported, making sure they're getting a cuddle afterwards if things don't go well, and making sure the celebration, if it's working. And there's no clearer message than that when DMAC won her double ski. Like, there was just this wave that came out of the Northcliffe girls' tent. I've never seen it before. And the celebration for DMAC winning that title, that's what makes Northcliffe look good. So I hear lots of things around, oh, they spend money and they do this and they do this. But actually, I don't know if that happens if people don't like each other, if people don't feel connected, if people don't feel like they belong, if people don't feel like they're adding value to a place. And I think that's one of the things that I think we can all have a bit of a look at. Yep, they've got good athletes, but what is it also around the culture that makes sure that those good athletes want to race for each other?
Yeah.
And I think that's something, and when I talk to people, I feel like that's something that Kev's definitely brought to the table. And I think as Kiwis, we should be really proud of that. Because I'm not sure that it's always been there.
Yeah.
And that's not saying that other clubs don't do that, but I just always hear, oh, they only win because they've got all the best athletes.
Yeah.
And I just think that's too simplistic,
yeah,
too basic to say that's why.
Yeah.
And I wasn't in the boys' arena, so I can't make that same judgment, but in the girls, I definitely can. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think people would hang out as much as they do with those sort of clubs if they weren't having a good time as well. So I think, yeah, that's probably a good, you know, reflection of why, you know, the boys' arena as well as the girls' arena get, you know, as strong, yeah, as they get.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can say the same for the beach arena as well. Like, I mean, one of the cool things about Aussies was, you know, going to Mooloolaba Bar and the way they set up the beach was just, you know, with that night racing for the finals and, you know, you sort of overlook the beach sprint track and you give those beach sprinters and beach flaggers a real kind of feeling, I think, of like, we give a shit about you.
Yeah.
And this is cool and we value you. And that whole sort of Mooloolaba promenade is just chockers, you know. And, you know, the organisation says, you know, by the time the finals get there, everyone has to take their tents down so everyone can see,
yeah,
the track and see the athletes and they got good commentary. And and again, you know, the clubs have really good structures and setups to support those beach sprinters and beach flaggers. And Northcliffe is the same because they're probably the strongest beach sprint, beach flag club as well. So I just think there's some really good things that both Northcliffe does, but also that we could think about making sure people feel like they belong in this place.
Is that nighttime racing something that would work in New Zealand though?
I don't know. I think that, I mean, there are some things that happen because of numbers.
Yeah.
Like, and I reckon a lot of that, and maybe we'll talk about that as officials, like the numbers of officials that can manage the event, there's more than New Zealand. And so therefore, you know, you're not starting on the beach at, you know, like on one day we started at 7:30 with the open women's iron. But and then that night I was at Mooloolaba at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
That's a long day.
Massive.
For me as a spectator. I did nothing. Just,
yeah.
But if you're an official, you can't manage that. So you have there's officials that, you know, you get subbed out. You don't stay there the whole day. You wouldn't even stay in one arena for the whole day. You know, like people can come. So I think that makes it really easy. I also think the infrastructure around it, like I don't know how much it costs to put on the lights and the big screen. And like on one of the nights, the electricity went out and luckily just as they finished the last race. So the celebrations, I think it was the relay night, like it was in the dark.
Yeah.
which is not ideal. But so there's those things which, you know, if that happens half an hour earlier, they're in shtuck. I don't know how they make that work.
Yeah. So it makes it a challenge as well.
Yeah.
That's one thing, like, you know, and we sort of did it a little bit this year, as we had, you know, relays on day one and then sprints on day two and then flags on day three. And I think that's really valuable. They did it for the doubles as well. Like, they had mixed doubles on one day and then women's doubles on another day and then men's doubles on another day, you know, so that there was that sort of infrastructure was, and the doubles in particular was spread out. Now, you know, and I get it that there's, you know, there's way more heats and quarters and semis of double than there is in New Zealand, so it takes longer regardless. But I really like that approach of actually when you've got challenging things like relays to deal with or with double skis to deal with, that you actually spread those out across multiple days rather than try and jam them into one session in one arena in one day.
And having said that, I mean, then it's up to the athletes, right? Yeah. And, like, still, like Oscar Smith, I reckon, must have run 12 – on relay night, must have run 12 high-intensity sprints.
Jesus.
So by the time he gets to the end of that, he's pretty shagged.
Yeah.
And so, but that's up to him.
Yeah, so he was doing 19s and opens.
19s, opens, both men's and mixed.
Okay, so a heat semi-final.
Heat semi-final for 19s, men's, 19s, opens, yeah, men's, and mixed.
12, yeah.
12 races. So by the time he gets there, he's pretty shagged. And
yeah.
I don't think – I'm not sitting here going it's perfect, because I think the same thing happens in Australia that happens here, which I just don't quite know how it works. And maybe it was just because they were trying to get through things. But, like, the under-17 boys had their own arena down the far end, and I didn't even got down there because it was a fair way away. But they just got hammered. Mm. You know, like, this under-17 arena, if you're a good swimmer, board paddler, ski paddler, iron, you're just going from round to round to round to round to round for everything. Yeah. Same with the under-17 girls. It was split over two arenas with the 19s and the opens, but they finished this, all the 17 stuff before the last day, so they got hammered as well. And yeah. I think – I just wonder whether that's something that just wonder when we've got young kids and we're trying to manage their well-being and their, like – it's their view of whether an event's good or not, and we're just hammering them, whether they come away stoked because they've raced lots or a bit like, far out, I can't manage that. Or whether you're still finding the best athletes, because, yes, you're finding the fittest athletes that are fast, but are you finding the fastest athletes?
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe that's irrelevant. Maybe it doesn't matter, but I do think there's an impact. I think the iron men and women and or those really aerobically sort of based athletes do have an advantage.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Like, so I think in New Zealand now, because since we've moved from under 16s to under 17s, the under 19 division by default has become shorter.
Yeah.
So there's generally only heats, sometimes a semi, but the heats and finals, right? Where the under 17 division, especially in the relays, like under 19 men and women in New Zealand for relays, board relay, ski relay, heat final.
Hmm.
That's it. You know, so if you're an under 19 athlete, you don't have to do the rounds that the under 17s do. So, but that for me is not going to change. And hopefully the sport continues to grow. So the reality is under 17 men and women in New Zealand are probably going to end up with more rounds or more heats or more cutthroat racing than they've had in the past. So therefore, I don't think it's the competition's responsibility to go, oh, we need to reduce the load on an athlete. We've got to run the same amount of events as we do for other divisions. You can't say, oh, it's pretty tough on people that race multiple events, so we're not going to do under 17 tube rescue anymore.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen, or we're not going to do under 17 runs from run. So you go, okay, if that decision gets taken away from the organisers, it then becomes a management decision between coach and athletes and parents to go, sorry, Brooke Pocock, I don't think it's a good idea that you do a board relay. I don't think it's a good idea that you do a runs from run, because you need to do ski relay, you need to do ski board, and we want you for a board rescue and a taplin. So they're the six events that you're going to do, and of those six events, you're probably going to do heat semi-finals, so you're going to do 21 races in a day, in a weekend, sorry. And that's probably plenty.
Mm.
So chill out on the other stuff. And that becomes a tough conversation for some athletes who go, I'm actually a pretty good swimmer. I want to be in a surf teams race. Or actually, we've got three good – and probably the bigger thing in New Zealand, we've got three swimmers and we need an extra one to make a surf teams race. Mm. So Brooke Pocock, we want you to come out and do this surf race, and that's just another thing that she has to do.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what surf's like, it's different from being a ski paddler, kayaker or a sprinter on the track or a swimmer. Like, because of surf and often there's a wave involved, you always feel like you're in with a sniff.
Yeah.
So you're like in with a sniff and or I'll do this because what if I get knocked out of this event over here? So I just think there's some really interesting conversations that might need to start taking place, because I think the reality is the reality. We see it on both sides of the Tasman right now. Like, and maybe it's fine. Maybe the athletes are good with it. Maybe it's just how it is and we're all cool. But I think it is worth having a conversation about.
You've just changed.
Maybe. Well, I think it's because I could never manage that many races.
Yeah.
I still couldn't manage it. So maybe I've changed. But I do worry about whether we get to a stage where people just get burnt out.
Yeah. Highlights, results-wise?
Oh, look, Michael Hanna winning the Open Main Sprint, yeah. That was pretty cool. That was really, really cool.
You put some heat on Stevie now.
I did, and now I'm having a guess. I'm going, man, wow, what's he going to do now? I think, you know, so maybe why he kiboshed Michael Hanna in a good way with that one. So that was cool. I was really stoked for D-Mac winning that Open Female Double Ski, not just because she won it, but the way she won it.
Yeah.
Like, she did some really smart things. And I don't know if you watched it, but there was a little double up with about 100 meters to go. And you could just see if she pulled down that, the back was going to come out of the double and they were going to slew. Yeah. Like, and you were just going, please don't go, please don't go. And she said the whole time, Georgia was like, go, go, go. And D-Mac was like, nah, we're not going. She waited for Peter out a little bit, then bang, over the top, and away she won. And I just think that showed the brains of D-Mac, and I think that was really cool. I was really stoked. There's a guy, I don't know this guy, but there's a young guy that won the under 17 single ski race from, I think his name's Aiden Carberry from West Beach. That guy just seems like a gun. I just feel like in 5 years' time, we'll be going, Aiden Carberry, this kid is just an absolute freak.
He's not a Kiwi, though.
No, he's not a Kiwi, but he just, I don't know, just something about it. Just, it was really cool to watch. And I think the other highlights was just Kiwis just getting out there and having a go. And it's easy to be a bit negative. And I just hope, you know, like the perfect example is James Scott. Yeah. Like, James Scott is better than what he did over there.
Yeah.
And I just hope that he just remembers that he is better than that. And I look at a few of those others. Like, I was really hoping to see and probably expecting to see Lane Crichton at the front of a ski race, and he didn't quite get there either. But like I said, I just don't think you can fly and race. I just don't think that's possible anymore. And so that was stuff that I was interested in. But, yeah, I think – I talked about it as well, Tara Schotter, I think she was good. Kate McCarty, I feel like Kate McCarty in my sort of brain has just really jumped on the scene. And I know she hasn't, but I feel like she's just someone who's really taking off, which is pretty cool.
Maybe it's an unconscious thing that she, because of the Lower Bay thing, but she just reminds me a bit of Nikki Cox.
Yeah,
you absolutely. Know, like just being like pretty under the radar, doesn't say a lot, you know, it's not big on social media and stuff or anything like that, but just gets out and grinds and does some really cool shit and wins races and goes well.
Well, I think I'm pretty sure she had a burst eardrum or a ear infection or something, and was told you can't race. And so she puts her blooming swim cap on and rolls in.
Yeah.
Like, and you're just like, well, I don't think you should do that. But she does, and I really like that. I really liked the other highlight was the photo that was taken of Jack Lepper going over that ski. Yeah. And so the guy in front of him is the Aiden Carberry, is that young guy that I was talking about. So they took the picture of Aiden Carberry, but in the background there's this crazy Sonic ski, like however high in this, and you're like, that's a cool photo.
Yeah.
Like you're gonna get that photo framed and keep that when you're, you know, 50 years old, to your kids going, no, have a look at this.
Yeah.
This rolls.
Yeah.
So I think that was all cool. And I think the other part of it the other cool thing was just, you know, seeing some of the people I hadn't seen for a long time, and you just catch up, and it's like,
yeah,
like you saw each other yesterday, you know,
yeah,
which is pretty cool as well. Yeah.
So like some of the things shout out to Mickey as well for getting a bronze in that beach relay. That was really cool. It was good to see her and Oscar and that getting that done. I was stoked for Max in the surface cruise.
And the Teplin.
Yeah. So Max and Sammy Roy. Anytime you win a Teplin medal in Aussies is really cool. And, you know, they were right there and amongst it. Yeah, with, what, two swim legs to go, they were on the front wave. So,
and I was watching that with Tex Dixon's grandma, who's honestly about up to my waist, and oh, my Lord. She is hardcore. I didn't know who she was, and I said to someone the next day, and they're like, oh, that's Tex Dixon's grandma. And I was just like, oh, and she was just yelling. And it was pretty cool. The passion for, we think we're passionate about Teplin at Morangi Bay.
Yeah.
But they're passionate. Like, we're not the only people that are passionate about Teplins. Everyone's passionate about it.
Nah, so yeah, that was pretty cool for those guys. I thought that was awesome. But Sammy Roy and the, what did they do? The lifesaver relay too. Yeah, couple of medals there. Open mix Teplin. They did it at national level.
Yeah.
Was it cool? Was it worth it?
Yes.
I'd love to see it.
Yes.
In New Zealand.
I tell you what was really cool. So at the semi-final stage, because you can choose where you put your boy and girl. You don't have to do it. It's not dictated, okay, you race a guy or girl here.
But you've got to have a male.
But you've got to have a male of each.
Yeah.
It's male or female of each.
Yeah.
And on the semi-final stage, which was on, I think, Saturday morning maybe, or Friday morning, one of the mornings, DMAC went off and racing guys and girls and absolutely punished everyone. Like, finished 100 metres ahead of everyone else. And I just thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like, it was a really cool situation. And she won't like me saying it because I was like, oh, she smashed the boys, and she'll go, oh, well, that's what I always do. But I just thought it was really cool that putting people under pressure and going, hey, look, let's have a go, and putting coaches under pressure about how they're doing it. And I was listening to, and maybe I shouldn't have been, but listening to the Burley guys trying to explain who they were going to put what where, and why they were going to put Lockie here and where Carberry was going to go and why they were going to put boys and girls. And there was a really cool sort of conversation on the beach about how that was going to be all set up because it's new.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool as well, I think. You know, people learning about new stuff.
Because they did it, you're only that one team per club, eh?
Correct, yep.
Yeah, and I don't know, I don't think I have a problem with that in New Zealand too, if we were to take that on. Like, I know there's been chat about bringing in the lifesaver relay back into New Zealand, and we've only run it once in 2018, and I just don't think there's enough boat crews to make it a legitimate national title in New Zealand.
No.
I like it for the fact that it brings the boat arena and the main source arena back together a little bit more, which I do like.
Yep.
But I just don't think there's enough depth in the boats to make it viable.
I wonder, for me, I feel like you were talking about before, that like packaging some things together. I wonder, you imagine on a Saturday night, there's a couple of things, whether it's, you know, you finish with the beach flags, but to lead into that, you have a board or a ski board or ski relay finals, one or the other. I don't think you need to have both. And then finish with a six-person mixed Teplin.
Yeah.
That for me would be a pretty cool end to a Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, and then you roll into your Sunday where you've got all your big finals. I feel like that would be a pretty cool opportunity for people.
Yeah. The only thing about mixed Teplin with only having one club, one team per club, is that there will be some really good athletes that don't get to do it.
100%.
And I don't know if I have an issue with that.
I don't think I do, because we're adding events.
Yeah.
Okay, and I think I think part of the beauty of one team is that it equalizes it a little bit. It gives equity to people. So, for example, you know, clubs like Bondi, you know, who over the last little while haven't really been around, get an opportunity to make an open final at Aussies.
Yeah, an open tip.
You know, like I just think that's there's some little stories like that that are quite cool. And so you imagine, you know, somewhere, I don't know, let's choose a Potiki.
Yeah.
You know, could they get three guys and three girls together and do it? Like, maybe they could.
Yeah.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
That would be pretty cool. And I really like that. I mean, again, the other side of it is the Mount Maunganui's who could make five, six, maybe eight teams.
Yeah.
There's some people who miss out. But,
yeah, I think I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
I think I am.
Mm.
Sweet.
Hmm.
It sort of felt like that finals package. And what I like about their finals package is, well, there's something I like about it, something I don't. I love the fact that it's all one arena.
Yeah.
So take the weather out of the equation, because it was an absolute abortion in terms of the conditions. So I didn't really get the vibe that it should have got, and if it was a nice day, but it was one arena, and it does take a long time, but they shorten it because it's only under 19s and opens, isn't it?
It was, yep.
And I think that becomes tougher in New Zealand. Like, I think I'd like to see the under 17s, under 19s, and opens all in the Central Arena. I think that's.
I agree.
But
why wouldn't you have the 15s though?
Time, just time,
yeah,
just time.
There's do you have to race every race then? If time's a factor, like, do you have to have? Out, yeah, I don't know. But yeah. Do you have to have a swim, board, ski, iron? You know, like, could you have, you know, like, because the other part of it is also that well-being for the athletes. So could you have, which is a random thing, could you have a board or a ski final as part of the Saturday night type thing before that mixed heptathlon instead of a relay? Like, could you do that?
Yeah.
Or could you do, you know, all the ski finals and arenas before you go to a central arena and on that Sunday? Like, I think there's ways around it, because my question is, why, other than time, does not having the 15s in the arena with them, what does that message does that send? And the message might be that we don't want to put too much pressure on you. The message might be, I think that under 17s is the level where you have maturity to manage a central arena too. So I'm okay with that as well. But yeah, I just think.
Well, I think potentially, like, the under 15. I don't know the answer, but here's my answer now: is, you know, the under 15s will look at what we have in the central arena and say, I want to be a part of that.
Mm.
But I do agree that I think some of the under 15 finals were lost at our nationals this year, and because of where it was put, and the timing that it was put, and there was stuff that I missed that I wanted to see, like the under 15 men's ski final. Our young fella won it. Hudson won it, and I missed it. I didn't even know. And I heard that he won it, and I was just like blown away, going, are you kidding me? You beat Dylan Blanchard. Like, that's amazing. Mm. Like, what a result. And but I didn't see it, and I missed it. And so I was a bit gutted about that. So I hear what you're saying. I do think we need to celebrate them, but I also see value in them looking at that under 17 ski final and under 19 ski final, going, I want to be a part of that.
Mm.
But then I also see, because they would see that in the way we had it with two separate arenas going on, but I was sort of watching the under 17 ski final from a distance, going, I think I want to be closer than I am. And I think it would be cooler if everybody was surrounded, like, in a massive bloody arena. So I don't know exactly what the answer is, time, because it just puts time pressure on. And we sort of got away with nationals this year because it was so easily managed with the conditions.
Mm.
If you put, you know, 4 foot gizzy, and then that time drags out and big washes up the beach and the arenas, you know, the arena gets kind of condensed because you can't get close to the water because there's waves coming up, you know, 30, 40 metres, that changes the dynamic of it.
But I think that's where you can make those changes.
Yeah.
Like, I think if you went, well, this is what our ideal is. Our ideal is X, whatever that is, and whether that – I think probably 15s is probably not viable, I think. But I think 17s could or should be viable. Yeah. And it might not be in every event too. It might be, whatever it is. But I think, and if we went, this is what we want to do, And but if XYZ happens, we can't do it, and we're really clear about that, then people know that. And if we have to go to two arenas, then that's all we have to do. And I think, but I'm with you. I think the reality is they had really good commentators. Not that our commentators aren't good, but you know, they had really good commentators. Lots of them that I don't know about the live stream. I don't know what the commentators were like on the live stream. I think probably they were rotating through beach commentary a lot and on the live stream. But really good commentators that set the scene. Again, you know how we talked about, like, there's this little there's the music that's played at Aussies, like it used to be in New Zealand when there's a final coming up. And I like that. And they introduce all the guys or girls. And I think there's a bit about that sort of ceremony of it,
mm-hmm.
that I would love to see come back. And maybe I'm just a bit old, but I feel like, you know, like, if Danny Morrison is in the ski final and it's his first ski final, I feel like it should be like something to really celebrate. And I wish we brought a bit of that ceremony back, which is a central arena with some sort of music that identifies this as a final, or something that identifies as a final, and his name's read out as part of the 16 people in the ski final.
Yeah.
I just think that should be what happens.
I think as athletes, as spectators and coaches and managers, we probably have to sacrifice a little bit to get that.
Yeah.
We have to sacrifice a bit more time on the beach, and we have to sacrifice sort of, you know, getting our trailers and that and our tents organized and pulled down a little bit more sharply, because on the Sunday this year at Nationals, we were off the beach quite nicely and up into the, into that presentation area to do all the presentations, and that was great.
Mm.
That was awesome. That's what we should be doing. But we would probably have added another couple of hours at least to get everything in one central arena. So there's sacrifices you've got to make.
Hmm. Cool. All right. Well, we've got some other stuff to talk about. But before we do that, Kayak Nationals. I went down to Kayak Nationals for the first time.
Good on you.
Yeah. But one thing that stood out for me, Kayak Nationals, was how awesome the clubbies did there too. So the guys that didn't go to Aussies, in particular, Kalani and Kaya, the Gilbertson boys, just smashed Kayak Nationals, and I was stoked for them. In fact, a lot of the clubbies. So, you know, the 1,000, K1000 for the men was like, I think Quade Thompson won it, Grant Clancy was second, Kalani was third, you know, in front of, you know, all the guys that are in the main squad. Kalani won the 500. Andrew Roy was right up there in the 200 as well. So just some really good efforts from the clubbies that were racing kayaks. In the girls as well, Yulia was killing it. Christy Tate was going really, really well. That young girl.
Tasha McGibbon
was going well. All of the
Jacqueline Kennedy.
Jacqueline
Midwest girl.
She's good, man. Jacqueline Kennedy is very, very good, and a really nice girl too. So I just did g'day a couple of times when we were warming up, or she was warming up, and I was like just slowly trying to recover from an event. And she's tried to talk to me, and I was like, I couldn't even speak. So apologies, Jacqueline. God, I wasn't ignoring you. I just couldn't breathe properly. That was really cool. The guys from Dylan Monk and those guys that came up from South Brighton guys were smashing. It was really, really
good. Good if they didn't run them at the same time.
Yep.
But I don't know. I don't know if that's feasible. Like, I don't know if it's fair to have to look across the world to see whether you shouldn't run the Nationals at the same time. So maybe that's an unreasonable statement.
Well, okay. So, I mean, lots of positives for the kayak guys. Like, the negatives are, like, part of the reason I wanted to go down there and race was to watch some of our superstars hit it out, and that didn't happen. None of the top girls raced, which I thought was real disappointing. And for me, it kind of felt like because they had some trials for them, the 23s and that, the day before, like on the Thursday, and then they race Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
That's pretty tough on those athletes.
Yeah. So, you know, what the whole vibe said to me was that Kayak Nationals, for the top guys, Kayak Nationals didn't mean much to them. Winning the national title didn't mean much to people. And I found that weird. I found that really weird. And that was kind of, maybe it was because the weather wasn't great as well and it was a bit down, but I thought,
there's definitely people that are trying to win titles and are excited about winning titles, but the elite guys didn't care about the titles. They were all about what they did in trials and what team boats that they put in and how there was kind of a weird vibe about it. So it was a bit disappointing to see that the top athletes weren't racing. So, but to answer, and the reason I bring that up is, if it doesn't matter that much, why not have it in February? Or, you know, if you could put it at any stage if it's not actually that much of a big deal, and then have your trials in April. If everything's based on trials and timing and GPS, then do the trials when it matters.
Which is how Australian swimming does it. So Australian swimming, you know, for the last however many years, some swimmers will know better than me, always have their Aussie titles for swimming. But then they have trials for the Olympics or the World Champs or the whatever at a later stage. So that's how they do it. Yeah. Maybe that's the way we should do it.
Well, I mean, you compare it to, we're talking about friends of ours here, so and really good friends of ours that didn't race. And I'm thinking, okay, if you went to swimming nationals, Louis Clebert was there and Erica Fairweather was there,
but that was a qualifying for the Olympics, though. That's the difference.
Yeah. But like, well, not the Olympics, but for under-23s and that, they did the trial that day before.
Yeah,
you know, so you just go okay, you know,
that's got to be. You would imagine compromises their performance at the back end of the couple of days potentially.
Yeah, I'm just saying that if your nationals isn't your pinnacle event, if your trials are your pinnacle event and nationals is not your pinnacle event, that makes it pretty hard. And we'll had a quick yarn to the new CEO, I forget the name, but and he was sort of, you know, pretty upbeat about things. But I was looking at him going, geez, it's pretty tough to get, you know, excited about this or to promote this as being your pinnacle event when most of when a lot of your top guys don't race. So that was the negative for it, but from a positive perspective, the clubbies that were involved in kayaking are killing it. And
cool.
It showed that, you know, especially those Gilbertson boys, they love to race, and that's, I reckon, they've grown a lot in the last 8 months. But Grant Clancy as well, it's just an animal at the moment.
Cool.
So that was cool. By the time this gets recorded, they might have we're recording now. By the time this gets released, they might have announced the Blackfin squad.
That's what I'm hearing, Tuesday. Yeah.
So this is it's Monday now. And from what I hear, the pool trials that went down at the end of last week went really well. There's some good times thrown down, and some people put their hand up, which is going to be really cool. So, again, put the shits up Stevie Kent and give him something to think about.
Have to do his job.
Yeah. Do your job, mate. Pick a team, mate. Get it done. And what that probably means is there'll be some disappointed people, but that's high performance. Suck it up. Get on with it.
100%.
But what we do know is what the Aussie team is. And, look, I'll tell you what, it's not a weak team, but there's gaps.
Well, I don't know about gaps. I think what it is it's quite new.
Yeah.
Like, it's quite I think you look at that open, you've got Jason Goff. He's raced in some junior teams, but, you know, you've got both Corey Fletcher and Zach Morris, who have never done a Worlds, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think even as a junior, or maybe Zach might have as a junior.
Yeah.
So, again, you got half of the boys never done to, but then you've got three absolute beasts in the pool for the boys.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And the girls, you've got, again, Bredinger, who went as a junior and as the junior world champion in the sprint and flags last time, and she's gone up to take the mantle of EJ Forsyth and see if she can – make sure she beats, you know, Bree Irving or whoever the Kiwis pick. And so that will be interesting. And then, again, you've got, Lana Rogers, who is the best Ironwoman at the moment but hasn't been to a Worlds before, I don't believe. And then Naomi Scott, who's good. And then three girls in the pool that are two have been around a bit, so Rachel Eady and Mariah Jones, but Chelsea Jones – who's probably the strength of them at the moment. She's pretty new. So I wonder whether I think it's hard racing at home, and I think it's hard racing on the Gold Coast. And we talked to Josh in the last podcast, like, you don't really get it. I just think the Aussies are going to expect their team to turn up and win. It's on the Gold Coast. We're just going to win. Like, let's just go. I don't think that's as easy as people think. And I was talking to some mates over there, and they were quite worried, particularly about, you know, the lack of understanding of what Worlds looks like. And I just think I'm really excited for the Australian team. I think it's a good team, but I think it's beatable. Mm. If you're going to the TAB, I reckon you're probably still paying whatever the New Zealand team is versus the Australian team, you're still paying unders on Australia. But it's definitely beatable. Mm. And I think that's the bit that I'm excited by. And I think there are some strengths and places, and like any Worlds team you pick, to get some strengths, you have to give somewhere else. And I reckon there are some places, and I'll be interested to see what the Kiwis do, whether they go like-minded and they just go, our guys are better than yours, let's go, or whether they go, that's what Australia's done, we're going to pick our team based on this because we think you've got a gap there and we're going to try and see if we can hammer this. And so I think that's a really interesting bit. I also think that in Australia you saw, you know, like there was a couple of French girls that did really, really well. I think it's Nikita Nissen-Serin or something like that. Sorry, I don't speak French. Sorry. But you know, she won the Queensland State ski title and then got third in the under 19 iron. And there's another girl there that was both in the French team at last Worlds that are going to be there. There was another French girl who got, like, I think in the top six in the beach flags. Like, there's going to be competition.
Yeah, and some of the Japanese guy that won the flags.
Yeah, Kenichi Wada, the 5,000-year-old. He's almost as old as Moore.
Shogo won the...
Oh, was it Shogo?
Yeah, Shogo won the flags.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they said Kenichi on the live stream, but I think it was Shogo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And so, like, I think it's going to be competitive.
And
I think we don't understand it either. So when I say we, I don't think Kiwis understand. It's not just New Zealand and Australia.
Yeah,
but so I'm interested to see whether when we win something, whether we've got enough gap between people in between us that makes a difference or vice versa.
Yeah.
If Australia can win something, if they can put enough people in between them and us to make a big difference. So, I'm really excited by it. I love Worlds. I'm biased. I get it. But I'm really excited for what the New Zealand team is and just getting out and supporting them.
Yeah. I'm going to be over there too. So
that'll be cool.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, really looking forward to that. So, if you do get selected whenever they name the team, congratulations and bloody rip in because you're representing all of us. And if you missed out, then it's because it's elite high performance sport, man. Not because you're not good, it's because there's a certain way.
Well, it's also like, and I think this is the bit that people don't understand. Like, if you miss out, it might not be because you're not good enough. It might be because the strategy of the coaches and the selectors is to do it a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Like, that's the reality as well. So I'm really excited for it. It's going to be the opposite to what we were for Aussies. I'll be there watching it on the live stream. You'll be there. And I'm just really excited. And I just want to get amongst it.
Sweet. Yeah, cool. Excellent. Right. And the last thing to wrap it up, the Golden Foot Awards. So we've been sort of talking about it for about a month now, but it's all come together. So we'll let people sort of consume what we've talked about tonight and do that. But later on this week, we are going to go live with the Golden Foot Awards, the first time we've done this. It started off as just wanting to hand out a few awards to some people that have had some good seasons. It's turned into 29 categories. And
which seems like a lot to me.
It is a lot. It is a lot, but when you split men and women, it sort of becomes...
Well, and we also wanted to show equity. We always get told we only talk about ski paddling and all that sort of stuff, and we wanted to make sure that we actually showed that we value everyone in surf, even if you're a coach.
Yes.
Even if you're a coach, we value you, we value what you do, you belong in our sport, so we wanted to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got, like, there's over 220 clubbies that have been nominated.
Which also seems excessive.
Well, some of them are double ups, actually. Some of them are double ups, triple ups. So don't stress about that. But the key thing we're going to be able to do, and when this comes out, we're going to go live with it, like I said, at the end of this week, is we want the People's Champ. So we want you guys to choose, select or vote for the People's Champ in each category. So you're going to be able to choose your best ski paddler, your best board paddler, your best surf swimmer, your best pool champs athlete, your best beachy. And then you're going to be able to choose your best open athlete, under 19, under 17 overall, under 15 overall. Probably most exciting for some people, we're going to have your boat crews, your canoe crews, best canoe crew of the season. IRBs are in there. Our coaches are in there. The officials are in there. And
then a Supreme. Is there a Supreme?
No, that can be the 30th. Fuck okay. it, we'll have another category, the okay. Supreme Award, overall Supreme Award. I don't know how the hell we're going to manage that.
Just anyone that, out of all of those other 5,000 people that we, that you think should be number one, no reason why, just pick them.
Yeah, so think of like the Golden Globes. The key thing about it is that unless it's one of those age categories that specific age categories like the best open athlete of the year, discipline specific awards are age agnostic, so age doesn't matter. I keep on saying that word, but that's all right.
Sounds good.
So it basically means that if you're an under 15 kid and you've had a great year in the ski or the board, then you're going up against the open guys that have had a great year in the ski and the board. So Dylan Blanchard in the ski is going up against Clarny Gilbertson and Kaya Gilbertson as well, and some others that have had some good years on a ski. A couple of the young girls in the pool are going up against Maddie Kidd and Zoe Crawford and Molly Shivnan. So that's going to be really cool to see how people stack up and who their favourites are. So when it comes out, jump online, do the voting, vote for your favourite clubby in each division. It's probably going to be your mates. Share around and get some. Right. Because what we are going to do is we're going to announce the People's Champ. So the person that gets the most votes in each category, but then between ourselves and a select group of experts, not just me and Jason, a select group of experts.
I don't think anyone counts us as experts, so no, it has to be other people.
We're going to give the golden foot award for each category. So that won't be the people's necessarily. Could be the same.
Could be.
The people's champ could be exactly the same as what we select. But two awards, the people's champ and then the overall golden foot award for each division or each category. So it should be fun. It's been a shitload of work. But
for you.
It's been a bit of work. We're getting the boys from Beyond the Beach involved, so they're going to be involved in a lot of those decisions as well. It's going to be really cool. And like I said, when it comes to boats and canoes and IRBs, we've gone outside to get some experts in from that part of the world because we just don't know the ins and outs of it as much as we used to.
And which there probably isn't any boaties or IRBs or canoe crews or any of that don't listen, then tell them to listen to this bit and tell them to listen and put their votes in because we all count.
Yeah.
We're all important. Yeah. Let's just get it done.
Absolutely. Should we give a run? No, we won't give a running update. We'll just make it a surprise.
How long are we going to keep the votes open for?
2 weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks is enough.
Plenty.
Otherwise, we'll forget.
Yeah.
We just won't do it. We just won't do it. Yeah. So 2 weeks.
2 weeks. That's us, mate.
It's us.
Good chat.
Good chat.
Everybody enjoy your time off. Have a bit of a break. Get away. We're doing it. We're the exception to the rule because we're still paddling and stuff. But go get away from the beach for a little bit so you can actually have a good winter and then come back fizzing for summer because it does end up being a long year.
It does.
All right, team.
Cheers.